Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Kernel Holding first quarter financial year 2018 results conference call. I will now hand over to Mr. Martin Novák from IPOPEMA Securities. Sir, please go ahead.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Martin Novák from IPOPEMA Securities. I'm happy to welcome you on the Kernel Holding first quarter of fiscal year 2018 conference call. We will start with the speech by Kernel's management, which will be followed by the Q&A session. I have pleasure to introduce our speakers, Anastasia Usachova, Chief Financial Officer, and Yuri Kovalchuk, the Corporate Investment Director. Now I would like to give the floor to the management.
Thank you, Martin. Dear ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Unfortunately, Mr. Gurevsky got seasonal virus with fever today, and he would not be able to join our call. We all wish him to get well soon. Therefore, Anastasia and myself will deliver on his behalf the traditional message to the stakeholders, and then we will answer your questions. Today we are presenting the financial results of Kernel for 3 months ended September 30, 2017, being the first quarter of our financial year 2018. Our revenues for the period increased by 40% year-on-year to $536 million, but profitability declined. EBITDA fell by 37% year-on-year to the level of $46 million USD, and net profit totaled $23 million US dollars, which is a 64% decline year-on-year. The financial leverage stands at a comfortable 1.7 times net debt to EBITDA level. As we discussed during our conference call in October, the operating environment remains challenging, affecting our results. Crop margins were depressed, tough market conditions undermined the performance of grain segment, while farming segment profitability declined owing to unfavorable weather conditions in central Ukraine. Our edible oil division delivered EBITDA of $21 million USD, which is 67% up year-on-year. The accumulated carryover sunflower oil stock as of 30th of June 2017 was shipped to execute the contracted volumes of the first quarter. Moreover, foreseeing the tight supply of sunflower seeds in the first quarter, we secured a sizable volume of seeds to crush in July-September 2017, thus running our facilities at nearly full capacity utilization during the weak season, according to our strategy, and on contrary to the first quarter of the previous financial year. As a result, our volumes of sunflower oil sold in bulk boosted 2.3 times comparing to the first quarter of the past financial year, more than compensating for the decline in crushing margin, which fell to the level of $43 per ton of sunflower oil sold in bulk. Such decline in margin was pretty much expected, as crushing profitability usually contracts towards the end of the season on tighter sunseed supply. At the same time, our bottled oil sales volumes surged by 33% year-on-year to 32.6 million liters, primarily driven by exports with quite healthy margin. Overall, we maintain quite conservative outlook for the fiscal year 2018, as we see some marginal improvement of crushing margins in current second quarter as new crop comes to the market. Sunflower harvesting campaign is already completed, and we estimate the total production level at 13 million tons, significantly below the amount of installed crushing capacities and somehow smaller than last year. Market trends has not changed compared to the previous years. Farmers are slow sellers. Competition for sunflower seeds is high. Crushing capacities are generally underutilized across Ukraine. At the same time, behavior of market players start changing. Second and third tier crushers are not so active buyers of sunflower seeds as at the moment, and several of them already declared publicly about suspension of operations. Despite the intense competition, we continue to keep our target for crushing volumes of 3.2 million tons of sunflower seeds in the fiscal year 2018. Our grain infrastructure division posted EBITDA of 18.2 million USD, which is a 17% decline year on year. Grain export volumes reduced this quarter as in Russia we assigned a portion of our Taman transshipment quota entitlement to a third party, securing a significant share of budgeted earnings from Russian operations budgeted for fiscal year 2018. While in Ukraine, our grain export volumes declined by 13% due to delayed harvesting campaign. All that translated into reduction of segment EBITDA margin to $1.9 per ton, which is a 49% down year on year, while segment EBITDA contribution stood at marginal $1.5 million. Delays in harvesting campaign also caused the 9% reduction in volumes of our export terminal segment. On top of that, we undertook a reconstruction of Transbulk terminal facility, which temporarily reduced the discharge rate, resulted in some delays while loading the vessels. Consequently, total segment EBITDA reduced by 18% year on year, reaching 8.6 million United States dollars. Grain intake volumes in our silo segment declined by 2% year on year, but EBITDA margin jumped by 17% to $5.9 per ton. Consequently, total segment EBITDA grew by 14% year on year to 8.2 million tons. For the full fiscal 2018, we expect the same grain intake volumes as a year ago, but margins might be slightly lower. In line with our expectations, profitability of farming division suffered from decline in yields due to adverse weather conditions in central Ukraine and increase of the cost base owing to domestic inflation. EBITDA, including revaluation under IS 41, stood at nearly 16.5 million USD, which is down 65% year on year, owing to lower contribution from biological asset revaluation on weak operational and pricing outlook. As of today, we nearly completed our harvesting campaign, producing around 2.5 million tons of different crops. As expected, the yields on our initial lands declined year on year, standing at 7.1 tons per hectare for corn, which is 20% reduction year on year, 5.3 tons per hectare for wheat, which is 9% year on year decline, 2.7 tons per hectare for sunflower seeds, also 10% decline year on year, and 1.9 tons per hectare for soybean, which is nearly 30% decline year on year. Nevertheless, yields provide for material premium to Ukraine's average. As already communicated, crop yields for the land bank acquired in summer 2017 are substantially lower, and we are working on bringing those lands up to our productivity levels. Our investment program is running according to the schedule. We are in the active stage of construction of Transgrain Terminal in Chernomorsk, and already launched the design and preparatory works for the construction of our new crushing plant in Western Ukraine. In addition to that, we are investing in expansion of our silo network, removing the bottlenecks to improve logistics. Finally, we would like you to update on fiscal year 2018 outlook. We confirm our plan to crush 3.2 million tons of sunflower seeds with average margin of around 50 United States dollars per ton of oil sold in bulk. Due to delayed harvest and low utilization of infrastructure in the first quarter of current fiscal year, along with the softer outlook for the grain exports margin for the remaining part of the season, we revised downwards our initial guidance on grain and infrastructure business, expecting absolute EBITDA contribution to contract by around 15% year-on-year. Based on more than 90% of the farm bank harvested and nearly 80% of total grain production pre-sold as of now, we expect full-year EBITDA for fiscal year 2018 contribution of around $85 million from farming business. Please note all the above estimates for the fiscal year 2018 are prior to unallocated corporate expenses, which we also expect slightly to increase year on year due to recent investments. This is pretty much on our end, and we are happy to hear your questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Please lift your handset before you ask your question. Thank you for holding until we have the first question. Our first question comes from Giri Sebler, Terra Partners. Please go ahead.
Hello, good evening. Thank you for this presentation. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello.
Good evening.
All right, good. Hello. Thank you for the presentation. I have a few questions. You reported on a decline in the throughput of the Taman port terminal in Russia. It's just slightly, I don't know, to 453,000 tons from less than 500,000 tons in the first quarter of the last fiscal year. What's behind that decline? Is it also because of, let's say, lower harvest of grains, or does it have anything to do with the tensions, let's say, between Ukraine and Russia, and making your business actually harder, as also the newly made agreement that you assign it. You talked about an assignment of a portion of your Taman transshipment quota to a third party. It's on page 5 of your quarterly report. So is it either the decline of that Taman port throughput is it because of rather worse harvest, or is it because of this? So let's say that the business in Russia is harder for you as Ukrainians.
All right, thank you very much for your question. You basically ask a question and answer it at the same time, because the decline in volumes of export of grain from Russia is because of the assignment of our quota entitlement in Taman to third parties. So basically in our accounts you will see contribution from assignment of quota, which is pretty much cash, but you would not see any volumes of grain exported from Russia because that quota has been assigned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I also saw that there is a 80% decline in revenue generated by Russia, which is represented solely by the Taman port, I presume. So you are reducing, it seems that you are scaling down or reducing your activities in Russia, right?
The answer is pretty much the same, because the assignment of quota means that the revenues are generated now by third parties, and we as Kernel just get a fee, which would be contributing to our P&L. So revenues from Russia and volumes from Russia will decline materially year on year because of this assignment. In terms of profitability, Russia would contribute in line with our initial budget as a result of this assignment.
Mm-hmm. I see. And what are the terms, of course, especially with respect to the assignment of the quota? I mean, what revenue or what amount of revenue could be expected in the years or in the quarters to come from Russia?
From Russia, we expect generally, it's not about revenues, it's just a net profit pretty much from assignment of quota of around $6 million on operating profit level.
So $6 million a quarter?
From Russia, yeah. For the full year, fiscal year 2018, we expect from Russian operation around $6 million of operating profit on the assignment of quota.
Operating profit. All right, just an operating profit of $6 million for the whole fiscal year 18. All right.
Correct.
Then, with respect to we already answered this. With respect to the acquisitions made this summer. I would like to ask you, you acquired two businesses, and the status of the land is leasehold. It's not freehold land of those two, because you acquired, I don't know, 20-something thousand of acreage with, 27,500 hectares, plus 190,000 hectares, but all this newly acquired, let's say, land is on leasehold. It's not on freehold, I mean owned by the two companies you acquired this summer.
Yes, this summer we made two acquisitions. First one, it was Ukrainian Agrarian Investments, a farming business with nearly 200,000 hectares of farmland and, you know, more than tons of storage capacity. That business was fully consolidated in our fiscal year 2017. The cash outflows, which you can spot from our cash flows for the first quarter of fiscal year 2018, relate to the acquisition of which is 20,000 hectares business and.
Sorry to interrupt you. Yes, but the land is free is leasehold land.
Yes, and
these two companies.
Yes, both companies, it's leasehold because both acquisitions were done in Ukraine, and in Ukraine we have a moratorium for free sale of agricultural land. So we basically acquired legal rights of legal entities which are party to long-term lease agreements. That's correct.
Yes, that's actually one of my other questions. To what extent these, let's say, right of use or the value of right of use to farm on these hectares, how to what extent the two acquisitions considerations were taken into account? I mean, to what extent these long-term leases of the farmland were considered, you know, because one consideration was 155, I think, million. Yes, and the second one was initially 43, according to your announcement from the summer, but now I can see it's 47, 46, or whatever. So, how if, even if, the farmland leases were considered, you know, in the negotiation, and how long these two companies' lease agreements have, on average, I mean, the expiration, you know, if it's, I don't know, if it's going to end in 3 years for one company on average, and the lease agreements for another one, for example, on average for 7-10 years, whatever.
All right.
You mean you know what I mean, probably. Because you mentioned in your annual report that the leases are from a few months until 20 years. if I remember that correctly. So there is a wide range, you know. So if you can just focus on these two acquisitions and the average lease expiration for these two, please.
So basically, it's not a straightforward exercise to digest the value which we paid for 1 hectare of farmland, because when we were acquiring those businesses, we were acquiring as part of the transaction also working capital, which was available as of the date of completion. We also acquired storage facilities, we also acquired machinery and equipment, and some real estate related to farming operations. But if you do, you know, kind of net back pricing, you know, the estimated value of this deal is basically presented in note 5 of our quarterly report on page 22, which actually gives you a fair value split between different asset classes which we acquired. In regards to the term of leasehold contracts, typically it's between 6 to 7 years, but for the targets which we acquired, there are some agreements obviously which expires next year, you know, but if you wait it, if you do it weighted average, it would be around 6 to 7 years. But for Ukraine, it's pretty much typical situation as we have a right of first refusal to extend leases, so typically we would be doing extension, you know, 1 year before expiration of the agreement, we would roll it over for the next period. And now, with recent changes in Ukrainian legislation, the minimum lease term is 10 years, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, all those agreements, 7 years, sorry, 7 years. So all those agreements would be extended for at least 7 years.
I see. And that's actually the point of my question, because, you know, if the previous or the preceding owners of these two acquired companies agreed to, I don't know, 6 to 7 on average lease agreements, are these, let's say, liabilities also not yet covered or shelved on the balance sheet because the IFRS amendment 16, or I don't know what's the number exactly, but it relates to long-term leases. They shall be, or they will have to be, shelved on the balance sheet, on the asset and on the liability side, on both. And I presume that these two preceding owners do not show these liabilities stemming from the long-term leases of farmland on their balance sheets. So were these liabilities, future liabilities, considered and are actually covered or included within those liabilities when the fair value of assets and liabilities was determined?
As we acquire farming businesses, we recognize the leasehold agreements as an intangible asset on the balance sheet, which is amortized over the remaining useful life of the contract, which in our case is, you know, the weighted average 6-7 years. So on one side of the balance sheet, you would have an asset, which is intangible asset, leasehold agreements, but on the other side, you will have a liability, which we paid. So basically, it's settled with cash.
I can probably comment on this. Most probably, you are referring to IFRS 16 leases, but this standard has not yet been adopted and will be applicable only from 2019 financial year. So from financial year 2019, we will need to disclose our lease payments as additional liabilities, but
in your report, I know. You don't probably understand me, because I know that the whole group, Kernel Holdings, it's in your annual report, is something between 400 and 500 million in total of the future lease agreement value, right? Yes, but for the two companies, for the two businesses you acquired this summer, Were these, and actually the future liabilities, were these liabilities considered or taken into account within the negotiation, or are they covered by, included in the considerations paid to these two, for these two companies?
27,000 expenses was consolidated only in the first quarter of 2018. So the lease payments, lease obligations, was not included for this volume of land in our annual figures.
Uh-huh.
Ukrainian agrarian investment acquisition was included in those total liability for lease payments.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Are these future liabilities stemming from the long-term leases of farmland, are they included within the liabilities of the two businesses that were acquired? You mean, I don't know if we understand, because you are talking about Kernel Holding and about the necessity to adopt this new amended since the beginning, I don't know, 2019. Yes, you are right. But it does not mean that the currently valid liabilities and future liabilities of the two businesses you acquired this summer will, you know, will vanish or will disappear. There these two businesses liabilities, future liabilities, were they taken into account when they negotiated the?
You mean these lease payments? They were taken into account as all of the cost for production, as well as potential profit which we will generate in this on this new land.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alex Ayub, Baha Capital. Sir, please go ahead.
Hey, thank you very much. Actually, I just had two quick questions. You gave some indication about the EBITDA of the various divisions for 2018, and I'm not sure I wrote it correctly. So you said that for the farming business, we should expect something around $85 million. You said that for the grain export and infrastructure, we should expect a 15% decline. And I think you said for the sunflower, you're going to be at full capacity, but at $50 per ton. I mean, based on that, I have, and you have intercompany costs. Based on that, I have an EBITDA of around $210 million. I was wondering whether that's kind of in line with what you were guiding for or not. So that's the first question. The second question is around the seasonality. So yes, Q4 was like 30% lower than, sorry, Q1 was like 30% lower than Q1 of last year. Should we expect the Q2 and Q3 to be much stronger than Q4, or not necessarily the case because of the downturn we're going through? Thank you.
Thank you. Well, in terms of EBITDA, total EBITDA for the fiscal year 2018, based on information which we have at hand at the moment, you know, we still believe it's going to be more than 210, but possibly slightly below than, you know, 250. So that would be working range for the full year EBITDA, depending where we also have our SG&A cost landing. In terms for your second question regarding the volumes.
Volumes or EBITDA?
Excuse me.
The seasonality, rather. Yeah, the second question was more around seasonality. Yeah. So, like, Q4 was 30% lower, but Q1.
Typically, our first quarter results are traditionally quite weak. We do expect, like, second and third quarter to be stronger. Still, you know, for the full year, we are quite, you know, cautious in regards of profitability of our platform this year.
Perfect. So if the EBITDA, I mean, we understand completely the circumstances. Can you give us guidance for how much capex you're planning to spend this year? Would you adjust your capex accordingly, given the situation is a bit tougher than it was last year? And how much capex are you planning to spend?
Yeah, in terms of the CapEx, as we announced, we plan to deploy $127 million this year for expansion CapEx. This pretty much relates to our greenfield projects. It doesn't include any potential M&As, and it doesn't include our maintenance CapEx of around $40 million a year. Out of that 127, as of the first quarter, we deployed $55 million. So the remaining $75 million are yet to be deployed, and as of now, we expect the CapEx would stay pretty much the same. If we have any adjustments over CapEx, we will definitely inform the market accordingly.
Excellent. And sorry, I just take the opportunity to continue just a few questions. So given the weakness in the EBITDA, where do you see your peak leverage getting to? Do you think it's going to get to 2.5 times, 3 times?
That we expect it to be pretty much similar as we had it last year, around $500 million of EBITDA. $500 million of net debt, and the EBITDA, you know, would be in the range, as we discussed, 210 to 150. So depending on where it will land, you will have a leverage ratio. Still, the leverage, we expect to be pretty much in comfortable zone for us, in line with our financial covenants.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Konstantin Fastovets, Adamant Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the call. Just a few quick questions. One, you mentioned that the quota that you sold this season, you're going to get $6 million, I believe, in operating profit from it. Was it included in this quarter's financials, or is that included later on? And if so, when are you expecting to receive that? That's the first question. Maybe we'll just go one by one.
Thank you very much, Konstantin. In regards to $6 million from Russian operation, it's for the full fiscal year 2018. Partially, it has been already included in our first quarter results, and it's going to be pro rata contributing over the next coming quarters.
What line is it in? Like, if we, is it in other operating profit or something like that in the quarter, in the financials?
No, it is on the EBITDA level on grain
business segment.
Okay. Another question that I had is, you mentioned that the margins in grain contracted partially because there was a delay in the harvest. Can you explain what the logic there is? Because I didn't really understand that.
Yeah, the delay of the harvest means that the supply was tight and demand was there because multinationals pretty much expected expecting the season to start a bit earlier, so they were building certain positions, and then when physical supply was not there, they were trying to buy, and the only way to buy in with tight supply, increasing the price, so margin contracted. If you look at the last year, where we had average trading margin around $4.5 per ton of grain, we still have pretty much the same outlook for current financial year. So we expect margins in second and third quarter to rebound on new harvest supply. But
okay,
still, it's quite flat in terms of dynamics versus last year.
Okay. That's good. And over the longer term, do you expect these margins to stay roughly, within this range, or do you think that there will be some sort of a rebound to previous levels?
Well, it depends what you mean previous levels. If you mean previous levels around $15 per ton, that's a huge expansion. So we are quite conservative for the coming year at least.
Yeah, what about like 10? You had, I think, in 2016, your 2016 financial year, you had about 10, I think. Is that reasonable or not really?
Well, for the time being, we are quite conservative with trading margins. So let's say to try to gravitate around $5 per ton.
Okay. And the last question, I'm not sure if you mentioned this already and I missed it. It's on working capital for this year. Do you expect an inflow and an investment in working capital or an outflow? And if can you state what the figures are if you have that?
Well, you know, in terms of the working capital, it's a function of two variables, so the commodity prices, global commodity prices, point number one, and point number two, expansion of the business. So in that regard, you know, we expanded business recently in farming business, which is counter-cyclical to our grain export and edible oil business. So in that regard, you know, we do not expect any spikes in working capital because it will be offsetting each other pretty much. In regards to seasonality, there might be, you know, some peaks. We usually lean towards December in terms of the peak of our working capital, and it also depends with the selling activities by the farmers. If farmers are active sellers, we are building, you know, our working capital at faster pace. But you know, the trends of the past couple of years suggest that you know, seasonality is actually flattening, i.e., farmers are slow sellers. Therefore, we work, you know, on average with quite low or moderately low, you know, working capital deployment. So it's, again, it will be, you know, dependent on where we see the season around December, but pretty much we do not expect any working capital shocks.
I see. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Konstantin.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding. Our next question comes from Alex Ayub, Vaha Capital. Sir, please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much. It's just a follow-up question. Assuming you have an EBITDA of $220 million for 2018 and the debt remain around the same levels, we have a leverage of around 2.8 times, which is a significant increase, but I was just wondering whether I am missing something or not, and two, what's the level of your covenants, please? Thank you.
Well, what we are missing still here is definitely what's going to be EBITDA. We just gave you a quite wide range. It could land around 250 or it could land lower, so let's see, you know, at least the second and third quarter result before we actually can give you a narrow, you know, EBITDA level for the fiscal year 2018. We just wanted to give a kind of an early warning to our shareholders, so, you know, to guide you a little bit on this challenging year so you could have a better visibility. In regards to covenants, I pass over to Anastasia.
You can check our covenants in our Eurobond transaction, they are public. We have finance cost to EBITDA at level of 3, which is quite comfortable. We have enough room.
Okay, but you don't have maintenance, like you don't have debt to EBITDA covenant on your other facilities?
We have in our short-term facilities net debt to EBITDA, but still at comfortable level.
Okay. And is it fair to assume that the debt, so you mentioned that you have, sorry?
Yeah, it's about 2.5.
It's about 2.5?
It's above.
Above 2.5. Okay, because, okay. And so you mentioned that the working capital peak might be in December, so I guess the net debt would decrease toward December and then it would improve after that. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's true, but we don't have any covenant like net debt to EBITDA for 31st of December, because this is when we have the peak in working capital requirements. But yeah, that's true. This is our peak.
Our covenants are being tested end of June, yeah?
Yeah, the covenants are tested at the end of June.
Perfect. And you have a significant amount of, I think, inventory available for sale or marketable inventory. Could you potentially use some of that to decrease your leverage if needed? I'm wondering why do you keep so much inventory which you could convert into cash easily?
This is our, you know, normal course of business, because there is a time gap between, you know, when we physically purchase and deliver to our off-takers. So, you know, it's just physical movement of inventories requires to have that inventory on the balance sheet. But still, all that ready marketable inventories which we have on the balance sheet, to the large extent, are already profitably pre-sold to third-party off-takers. The way it works, when we buy something from the farmers, we immediately try to fix a physical forward contract on FOB or CIF basis, i.e. you would see inventories on our balance sheet until we discharge them to our international takers, but effectively they already, you know, pre-sold and the price risk has been in such regard mitigated.
Oh, fantastic. But if they have already been pre-sold, that should show under your liabilities, no? Under your current liabilities, and I don't see your current liabilities being so high.
Our still current liabilities, you know, if you look on the balance sheet, you will have the, just let me.
Advances from I mean...
So if you look, for example, you know, in comparison to previous year, advances from the customers, you know, at a higher level, while trade accounts payable slightly lower because on the volumes, you know, on the volumes which we, you know, had. So that's pretty much there. Trade accounts payable, you know, 68 million and advances from customers at 109 million. USD.
And we also have in the contractual obligations, we have also disclosed the contracts we signed and the obligation to deliver the goods.
Sorry, just to finish on this point. So, I mean, on the related liabilities, you have, call it 91 plus 68, call it $160 million, whereas you have $470 million of inventory. So you have like... 2-3 times more inventory than these short-term related liabilities. I was wondering, do you really need that much inventory to manage your working capital?
We also finance our inventory by long-term debt to have more flexibility. We extended our maturity profile of our debt. As Yuri explained, we just need this inventory to run our business.
Okay, sure.
It's our business,
thank you very much.
Yeah, it's what we do.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Stella Critch, Barclays. Madam, please go ahead.
Hi there, good afternoon. I just wondered, now that we're heading into 2018, what's your expectations around land reform in Ukraine next year? You know, what kind of discussions do you think will be taking place? Do you think that you will see any major policy changes next year? It'd be great to get an update on that topic. Thanks.
Thank you, Stella, for your question. Well, we were quite optimistic about the land reform just in summer. Specifically when IMF was strongly supporting the reform, believing it's a good, you know, fiscal stimulus which might be implemented internally in Ukraine. Unfortunately, IMF changed its stand on the matter, delaying, removing it from CPs. On its agenda. Our in-house view also changed in line with that. So our view as of now is that land reform most likely would not happen at any stage before presidential elections, which, if I'm not mistaken, in 2 years from now. So most likely we will see the first moves towards you know, land reform in Ukraine only after the next presidential elections.
Okay, that's great. That's really helpful. I also wondered, could you give an update on the price trends that you're seeing in crops at the moment? And I think as of the last conference call, you'd hedged a portion of the output, but not all, because you were waiting to see if you can get better pricing. So I just wondered if we can get an update on that as well. Thanks.
Yeah, so basically around 80% of our crop production has been already pre-sold. And when we guided the market on $85 million EBITDA from farming division prior to allocation of corporate expenses, this takes into consideration the 20% open position, open loan position at current prevailing market prices. So at the moment, you know, where we are in the five consecutive years of falling soft commodities prices, which, you know, on an inflation-adjusted basis are just as low as never before. Unfortunately, you know, we do not expect any changes in this trend, at least for the current year, but we would need to wait for the harvest reports coming from Latin America and later on from, you know, North America. Before any, you know, changes on price expectations, global price expectations.
Okay, that's really helpful as well. And in terms of the top line price trend in the sunflower oil business, are you seeing, is this just very strongly being driven by the input prices, or is there any kind of independent price dynamic for the end prices of sunflower oil? That'd be great color as well.
Well, you know, we are pretty much price takers. So we at Kernel, we never, you know, took any pricing views for commodities, international commodities, for very simple reason, because we are price takers. We as Kernel's price takers from international marketplace and price givers to the farmers. And the marginality of our business, the profitability of our business is pretty much dependent on physical supply and demand fundamentals, specifically for Ukraine, for sunflower seeds. When we speak about, for example, sunflower oil margin, i.e. if supply is tight and install capacity is large and we have a substantial gap in supply and demand, this is the factor which determines our profitability. It's not directly correlated with international commodity price. Obviously, we as Kernel love international commodity prices to be, you know, high, because when prices are high, you know, we definitely have a better result in farming business. Along the way, all Ukrainian farmers are happier, you know, they are easy sellers, etc., etc. That would help us. But for the time being, you know, international prices are not very supportive. This is also relates to, you know, edible oil pricing dynamics as well.
That's great. Many thanks.
Thank you, Christelle.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding. Our next question comes from Dmitry Konolovalov, HSBC. Sir, please go ahead.
Hello. I have a question about your competition. Yuri, you mentioned there has been some kind of capitulation from the small crushers. Could you kind of give the flavor, what's the scope, and is this a trend or just something that you expect to be bigger going forward? Thank you.
Thank you, Dmitry. Well, for the time being, it's just the first signs which we, you know, took from the public resources, you know, after speaking to our procurement team on the ground, they did confirm that some smaller guys, which were quite active last year, they are not that active this year. So we do see the trend, but it's early stage of this trend. So let's see how, you know, crushing margin would develop towards second and third quarter. As of today, our crushing margin slightly, you know, higher than first quarter margin. We believe at this level of crushing margins, second and third tier guys, you know, start burning cash. So let's see a little bit more data from the grounds as the season progresses before making any conclusions on the trend. But at least what is happening is quite understandable for us, considering the financial metrics the guys in the second and third tier are operating on.
Yeah, thank you, Yuri. And just one additional question. Any indication of the regions, like where these capitulations happening? Is it Western Ukraine or Central Ukraine or just overall?
More than 90% of crushing capacities are centralized around Central and Southeastern Ukraine. So when we speak about the second and third tier guys, they are located in those regions which, you know, very high competition for sunflower seeds is happening at the moment.
Thank you very much. Also have a quick question on the, I read about the India was planning to increase the import tax on the edible oils. Could you just give any, give me just a feel how this is going to impact you and what should we expect?
Once again, import tax or export tax?
No, no, import on the...
India. Yeah. Well, you know, in regards to taxes, pretty much all taxes are pushed down to the consumers. So in that regard, you know, we expect probably some, you know, short-term volatility in terms of India as a buyer, but, you know, with passage of time, as soon as new tax regime is priced in, you know, towards consumers, we expect it would not have any material or any impact on us. So typically, all the prices in this business, all the taxes in this business are pushed down to the consumer.
Well, I see. Okay, thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding. We have no other question. Dear speakers, back to you for the conclusion.
Thank you very thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today. Unfortunately, Andrei was not here, but we hope he will recover soon and will be back to office soon. So thank you very much, and if you have any further questions, we are happy to have one-to-one calls or email exchange. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our conference call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.